chemical device. So far, there is no confirmation that any device has been found, leading to questions over whether it could be located elsewhere still undiscovered, or if it ever existed in the form the police suspected. A detailed search will continue today at Lansdowne Road and is likely to go on for days. Scaffolding and a screen now covers the building in order to protect the site for the police investigation, as well as the inquiry by the Independent Police Complaints Commission into the shooting of one suspect. That suspect remained under armed guard at the Royal London Hospital overnight, but may be moved today. His brother is being held and questioned at Paddington Green Police Station.
The Labour Party has indicated it's not prepared to break the financial link with the trade unions as part of any changes to the way political parties are funded. Hazel Bleers, who chairs the party, is making her position clear in Labour's submission to the investigation of party financing, chaired by the former civil servant Sir Hayden Phillips. From Westminster, our political correspondent, Jo Coburn.
Funding of political parties has always been controversial. The Prime Minister called for a review of the system after the Cash for Peerages row, when it emerged that the parties had accepted loans worth millions of pounds from wealthy businessmen which weren't declared. A number of donors were then nominated for peerages. As part of its response to the review of party funding, the Labour Party agrees that further caps on party expenditure and increased state funding should be considered. But sources close to the party chairman have drawn a red line in the sand when it comes to preserving the financial link with the unions, seen by some as Labour's Achilles heel. The Conservatives have announced proposals for a ban on all loans except from financial institutions and additional state funding of political parties. The Liberal Democrats have called for a cap of £50,000 on all individual donations.
The leader of the union representing senior civil servants has accused government ministers of trying to shift responsibility for failing policies onto their officials. Jonathan Baum, the General Secretary of the First Division Association, described recent criticism of civil servants by ministers as politically motivated. His comments come after the Home Secretary, John Reid, condemned his own department as not up to the job, and civil servants were criticised for mishandling tax credits. Local Conservatives are meeting to choose a candidate for the by-election in Bromley and Chislehurst in South London. It's far from certain they'll choose from a list of the leader's favoured people. More from our political correspondent, Robin Brandt.
This is the first time a candidate's been selected under the new era of David Cameron's A-list. 100 people have been chosen, apparently the brightest and the best. There's a high proportion of women and ethnic minorities on that list, with a few celebrity names. They are the ones the leader wants to see as tomorrow's Tory MPs. If Bromley and Chislehurst members were to choose a name from the A-list, it would be a boost to Cameron's Conservatives, and it would send out a clear message. But it looks like they won't play ball. Of the unofficial top 10 contenders, only a few are from the list. The late MP's widow, Carol Forth, may be considered. Proof that even she is prepared to try and stop an outsider being selected.
The US military has confirmed an investigation into the deaths of Iraqi civilians in a village north of Baghdad has cleared American troops of any wrongdoing. A coalition statement said as many as 12 civilians died during a raid on a house in Ishaqi, in which an Al-Qaeda suspect was captured and an insurgent killed. Witnesses and local Iraqi police say the troops shot an entire family and then called in airstrikes to destroy the evidence. But the military statement said these allegations were absolutely false. Tony Blair will have a private audience with Pope Benedict at the Vatican this morning. The Prime Minister, who's been on holiday in Italy for the past week, is expected to invite him to Britain for the first papal visit since 1982. Reporting from Rome, David Willey.
It's just over 3 years since Tony Blair last took the lift up to the Pope's library at the Vatican for a private audience. On that occasion, on the eve of the invasion of Iraq, Mr. Blair explained to the late Pope John Paul the reasons why he thought a military attack on Saddam Hussein would be morally justified. In 2006, with a new pope installed at the Vatican, one of the main subjects of discussion is expected to be how to confront international terrorism. Another will be the problems of interreligious dialogue. Mr. Blair, fresh from talks with the new Iraqi government in Baghdad and with President Bush in Washington, plans to explain to the Pope his views on how greater understanding can be achieved across religions and cultures in a globalized world. He's also expected to extend an official invitation to Pope Benedict to visit Britain, perhaps in 2008.
The United Nations Secretary-General Kofi Annan has told BBC News he's disappointed that the political declaration agreed by an AIDS conference at the UN does not say homosexuals, prostitutes and drug addicts are at risk from the disease. The declaration agreed to try to meet the goal of universal access to prevention, treatment and care by 2010. From New York, here's our UN correspondent, Laura Trevelyan.
While political leaders have hailed this agreement on how to tackle the spread of AIDS as a step forward, and activist groups have denounced it as weak, Kofi Annan is disappointed that after a quarter of a century, there are still politicians who won't speak frankly about the problem. He accused those African and Middle Eastern leaders who kept references to homosexual men, prostitutes and drug users out of the final declaration of short-sightedness.
You need to call a spade in this kind of a fight. You cannot be wishy-washy. If you want the young people to know what is dangerous for them, if you want to educate them, if you want people to understand, you have to be clear.
Mr. Annan said politicians should show leadership over AIDS. Silence was death. He admitted leaders had used some weak and amorphous language in their final declaration, but he insisted some progress had been made. He'll step down as Secretary General at the end of this year. Whoever comes after me, he said, will have to continue this fight against AIDS.
Nigeria's president has joined efforts to secure the release of six British oil workers. They were kidnapped with an American and a Canadian from an oil rig 40 miles off the Nigerian coast. It's not clear who is holding the men, but the company which owns the rig said it's made contact with the hostages and they were said to be in good health. From Lagos, Alex Last reports.
The Nigerian president, Olusegun Obasanjo, has added his weight to efforts to get the eight hostages released. A spokeswoman said the president was optimistic that the men would be freed quickly and unharmed. The owners of the oil rig said that they had been in contact with the hostages, who said they were in good health. The eight men, six Britons, an American and a Canadian, were seized by around 20 gunmen in a pre-dawn raid on the oil rig, far from the Niger Delta coast. Despite the presence of the oil industry, there is widespread poverty in the Delta, and numerous well-armed militia groups operate in the area. The Nigerian government says this kidnapping appears to be the result of a local dispute.
Campaigners for lower taxes are calling this Tax Freedom Day. They say it's at this point in the year when we stop working for the government and start working for ourselves. The Treasury says it doesn't recognise the idea. Our economics correspondent Hugh Pym reports.
Tax Freedom Day is a device used by a free market think tank, the Adam Smith Institute. It's worked out from the total amount of tax raised as a percentage of the overall economy. That percentage is then applied to days of the year. The theory is that people and businesses need to work that number of days just to pay their tax bills. That period has now elapsed, but this year's Tax Freedom Day is 3 days later than in 2005, and the latest in any year since 1988. A Treasury spokesman dismissed the idea. He argued it didn't take account of tax credits and said the average family with children was better off in real terms than in 1997.
The head of the Medical Research Council has called on ministers not to rule out the use of chimps and gorillas in animal experimentation. In 1997, the government said that it would never approve such experiments, as apes were too similar to humans. But Professor Colin Blakemore said they should be considered in the event of a disease emerging, which could only be cured by research on great apes.
8:10. The headlines in the papers this morning are pretty frightening. Police frantically hunting for terrorists armed with a lethal chemical bomb. The most commonly used phrase is poison bomb. And there's a great deal of speculation that it's in the form of a vest that a suicide bomber might wear. There's even a picture of a similar vest on the front page of The Times. What's the basis for all this scary stuff? Our Home Affairs correspondent is Margaret Gilmore. It's not coming from the police, is it, Margaret?
John, I wouldn't tell you, or I couldn't tell you exactly who my sources and who's been talking to me are, or they wouldn't talk to me. But I have been talking to senior sources across the security services, and they have told me that they did receive what they describe as credible intelligence that there was a viable chemical device in the East London house. Now, they said they did not believe it was a sophisticated bomb, but a homemade device. And they are also telling me that they're still at the very early stages of the police forensic fingertip search, and they still believe there could be something harmful and toxic there. But they've also told me the fear is that if they do not find it there, and if their intelligence is as good as they believe it is, then there is a real possibility it could be elsewhere. Your talk of suicide vests, they have never gone down that road with me. The words they've used has always been a viable chemical device and homemade.
Right. So, and harmful and toxic could, of course, mean anything at all, couldn't it? It's not difficult to buy harmful and toxic materials from a chemist and put them together.
Exactly. And I think that's what, and now we're moving slightly into the realms of speculation because they were not specific with me. But I think you can deduce from the fact that they didn't evacuate the area that the information would be about some kind of homemade device. If it were chemical, and I'm not a scientist, but if it were chemical, it could be dangerous to people close by and toxic to people close by. But if it did, for example, detonate in some way, it would very quickly become harmless. It wouldn't be a danger once it reached the air for a very long time or for a very long or for a very wide area. So it would be harmless by the time it reached next door, for example.
Just in a phrase, are we going over the top on this, do you think?
I think that they really do have a real fear. That's the impression they're giving me, that there is something in that house. They have left the door open, that their intelligence is wrong, because that has happened before. But the information I was getting was that they do believe that they could well find something there.
Margaret, many thanks.
12 minutes past eight. It's 25 years since AIDS was first discovered, and in that time it's killed 25 million people and another 40 million are infected with HIV. The United Nations has spent the last few days thrashing out a document that sets out how they aim to get prevention, treatment and care to everyone who needs it by 2010. But even after all this time, some countries have insisted that any mention of homosexuals, prostitutes and drug users be removed from the document. To get the developed world to recognise how the disease has been affecting Africa, Nelson Mandela asked a number of high-profile figures to campaign, including the singer Annie Lennox. I spoke to her earlier and asked why she'd agreed to get involved.
The continent of Africa is absolutely devastated. Over half the population of HIV sufferers are women. They are obviously mothers with, you know, several children. And usually what happens is the women become infected through their husbands or whatever. Then they themselves become HIV positive. Then they start to become ill. And their children are left as AIDS orphans. And so you have this kind of incredibly compounded problem that just goes through the most vicious cycle. You know, people say that in some countries, say life expectancy is going back to middle-aged times. I mean, you go to certain places, like in Uganda, you don't really see many old people. Imagine that your life expectancy was to be about 35 or 38 years old.
It doesn't seem as if there's much change in global attitudes. I mean,
There isn't, because the whole thing is so controversial and it's such a kind of complex issue. It's kind of a can of worms. And I actually feel that leadership, you know, politicians, people that are in the know, who should be in the know, are not really clear. They don't really have clear strategies, and they're not really tackling it in the way it needs to be tackled, which is really head on. I mean, it's a total emergency.
But isn't that what something like the conference that's been going on this week is meant to be doing? And isn't it doing that?
It's a big mess. There's supposed to be some kind of union and some kind of joint focus on what should be happening. And people are squabbling over things like whether they should use condoms or not, or whether people should simply abstain from having sex. I mean, we just really need to get over this thing about condom use. I mean, we need to educate people that they absolutely need to wear condoms. There's no question about that. And the fact that people are quibbling over it seems ridiculous to me.
You described it, I think, as if the whole of the African continent is ablaze and the world is just ignoring it.
That's how it feels when you go to Africa and you realise, and you're standing in the street and you're looking at the population, and they say that, you know, maybe one in five, let's say in Uganda, for example, are affected or infected by AIDS. The truth of the matter is, I believe it's far more than that.
But we come back to the conference that's going on, the rows that are going on about how you deal with it. But it's entirely acceptable that people have different views on what should be done about it, isn't it?
It's acceptable that people have different views, but when you come to a state of emergency, this is beyond emergency. This is just insanity. I mean, whole generations of people are being wiped out in Africa. Whole generations of people are going to be wiped out. This is not normal. This is so extreme. So I think in these situations, people have to get over things like condom use. It's just a nonsense, or whether antiretrovirals are, you know, not particularly healthy. I mean, the South African government has been speaking in terms of, you know, well, maybe, you know, antiretrovirals are not, we don't really think that they're, we think they're very toxic. It's insanity. It's like Alice in Wonderland over there.
If somebody listening to you think, fine, Annie Lennox, you know, this is somebody I listen to, I'm aware of, I hear what she's saying, but what can I do about it?
Well, you can just get to your laptop, if you've got a laptop, most people do, and get to a website and educate yourself, inform yourself. You can become proactive.
It's not about giving money.
Obviously, every situation requires money, but I think awareness is the first thing that we need to do so that we can urge our government to follow through on the decisions that were taken at the G8 summit last year.
And for those people who say, look, it's an African problem, let Africa deal with it.
Well, they're kidding themselves. AIDS has no boundaries, and it goes through every country on the globe has been affected by AIDS, so this is a nonsense. What makes me so sad is that, you know, people's lives can be extended. They can have quality of life if they have access to antiretroviral treatment. People with HIV virus can live, and mothers can live to take care of their children, and I think that's a basic fundamental human right. Genocide. I mean, Nelson Mandela used this term genocide, and it's a very strong word to use. But this is a genocide of a preventable disease that we're talking about.
But you also normally use genocide when you're referring to somebody who's killing, who's one people killing another people. And that isn't happening here.
Well, in fact, if we don't allow people to have access to treatment, then that is what's happening, in fact. It's an emergency. It's an absolute state of emergency. And we will, if we don't talk about it, we will be culpable and we will be part of the reason why so far 25 million people have died of AIDS. We need to turn the tide around.
So what do you do? What does Annie Lennox keep doing? Keep talking?
I talk, I inform myself, I show up, I do my bit.
Do you think there's a sense in which the public are almost becoming inured to rock stars giving concerts?
I can't say whether people are bored with people like myself speaking out, but I mean, if I stop speaking out, who am I? I mean, what am I? I mean, I can use my worth to benefit others, that's fine. I mean, I obviously have to be very selective about what I say and how I say it, and I don't want to bore people, but I'm not seeing governments taking this hugely seriously. I'm not seeing action.
Do you not think that the British government is doing all it can, given what we heard and saw last year at the G8?
I think I'd like to see it take a real leadership role.
Is it not doing that?
Not enough. Not enough. I mean,
Gordon Brown would say, look how much money we've set aside, we've tried to get money into these programmes. Tony Blair would say, I've taken a lead on Africa.
Yes, I know that, but I still feel that much more needs to be done. I don't see the wheels turning quickly enough. And I think, you know, you have a Make Poverty History campaign concert, Live 8 concert, that's fine. And we had an incredible, you know, experience last year. But if we just walk away from it and think, oh, that's fine, that's all sorted then, we just had a concert. It's not. We have to keep talking about it until things are sorted.
And do you think there's a sense in which the British public, that is how they are reacting to it? They are thinking, okay, fine.
I think that any public is interested in things as long as they're on the front burner. But I think that we tend to get collective amnesia and we think that things are going to go away or get sorted by themselves. And I think that we're all immensely powerful as individuals nowadays. We can be very proactive. We have laptops, we have internet. There are so many things that we can do collectively. And I think that we sort of undervalue the power of each individual. I mean, I'm just an individual. I don't stand for anything or anybody. I'm speaking up for what I think is a human injustice.
You sat and you give obviously get angry at it.
Well, it's something that you would get angry about if you saw something that has devastated the lives of every kind of age group of people, not just young babies, mothers. Everybody is affected.
Annie Lennox, thank you very much.
20 past eight. It's been a busy week one way and the other, but let's have a look at your letters, and they reflect something quite different from the run of the news. Most interest in an interview with Tristram Hunt, the historian who got an awful lot of you upset when he told us that mobile phones have no place in the British Library.
First of all, it's very difficult to get a seat after midday. Secondly, it's very noisy because all these undergraduates are doing what undergraduates do. And thirdly, it's increasingly difficult to order the number of books you need. But the truth of the matter is that there are any number of decent, good university libraries in London for these students to use. They don't need to be in the British Library.
Samuel Burke said this: how dare Tristram Hunt stereotype undergraduate students as lazy and noisy? Most undergraduates use the library, consider it a real privilege and respect the rules. If all the seats are full of undergraduates by noon, then how does he infer that none of us get up till three? Good for the British Library and being open, accessible and student-friendly. Down with Hunt for his elitist and obnoxious comments.
Well, opinion ran against Tristram Hunt by about 9-1. Joanna Woods, one of those who wrote, as a 20-year-old history student at Cambridge about to sit my finals, and a regular listener to Today, I was sad to hear your interview with Mr. Hunt. He's obviously more interested in polemic than fact, and in a story, and this is particularly damning. I never use my phone in libraries or make noise, and I'm up early every morning to work. Perhaps Mr. Hunt should get up earlier to get a seat instead of spending his mornings in publicity stunts defaming students, who incidentally are the reason that he has a job.
There we are. We did have a few letters about other things as well as that, including a chap called Prescott, who's left a house called Dorney Wood. Jerry Rooney had little sympathy for the Deputy Prime Minister. He owes his position partly to the support of the unions. Do you think it's crossed his mind that the union members from the doomed Peugeot plant or the beleaguered Vauxhall plant would love to have had the luxury of playing croquet last Thursday afternoon?
But Penny Pedley wrote, I for one am pleased that there is someone in the country who recognises that time for relaxation is important. And when a job involves working weekends, that sometimes needs to be taken during the week. If we balance work and relaxation well, we actually work more effectively. It seems to me that John Prescott is setting a good example of balancing his lifestyle.
And Meg Oliver agreed. So many of our driven politicians, led by our Prime Minister, seem to have succumbed to the seven-day week. No wonder some of their decisions need to be apologised for. Mr. Prescott may be fresher for his onerous responsibilities this week. And Jeremy Hawthorne observed, I recall Francis Drake had no difficulty combining business with a game of bowls. John Prescott should have said, there is time to finish the game and save the nation too.
We had a big response to our discussion on Wednesday of the growing phenomenon of roadside shrines. Gavin Peebles wrote, I was surprised that the French system of drawing people's attention to road deaths was not mentioned. The very striking black human form silhouettes on the roadsides, often in close proximity to one another, or with numbers in white painted on them.
Philip Hurst observed, surely it's much easier and simpler to place an obituary or death notice in your local newspaper. It'll probably be seen by more people too. More contentiously, Adrian Kenton told us, if the roadside flowers are a danger of distraction, then all speed cameras should be removed because these are not only a major distraction, but have been proven to have caused road deaths. Contentious view, that.
Finally, a rebuke from Graham Bartlett. If we're to have a debate about Magna Carta, which we did on Tuesday, let us at least get the terminology right. As every self-respecting schoolboy and girl knows, the Latin words Magna Carta translate as the Great Charter. The definite article comes free of charge, so to speak. So it is incorrect to speak of the Magna Carta. Your two guest contributors knew this, and it showed in their replies, but the interviewer obviously didn't. Tut,
who
tut.
Can that have been?
Indeed.
Silence. 25 past eight. Let's blame Gary because he's at Epsom. Morning, Gary.
John, good morning to you from Epsom. It's a beautiful morning. The sun beating down, clear blue skies, and just passing me right at this very second, that's the sound of one of the many horse boxes arriving here in the last few minutes. We've had a papal bull arrive, Sir Percy, that possibly have chances. We'll be discussing with our experts in just a moment whether they actually have. Just before that, a derby preview. Before our derby preview, to tell you in the test match, that's going to resume this morning with England on 53 for 2, Sri Lanka all out for 231. Test match special for you, Radio 4 Longwave. Golf, the Welsh Open, Sweden's Robert Karlsson leads by four strokes. At the French Tennis Open, defending champion Rafael Nadal through to the last 16. England face Jamaica today. It's their last game before the World Cup. BBC Television will have that match live from 2 and also 5 live. And that'll be followed, a great day of sport, by the Derby off at 4:20, 18 runners. Now, it's estimated that £150 million will be wagered today. David Hurd is from William Hill, the bookmakers. David Hood, rather, is with me. David, good morning to you.
Good morning, Gary.
Cornelius Lysett, our correspondent, is here.
Hello.
£150 million today, and it's going to be considerably more at the end of the month, isn't it?
It's a crazy month of sport, to be honest with you, Gary. I mean, this kick-starts it. You've got the Epsom Derby, the William Hill Greyhound Derby tonight at Wimbledon, a football match, of course, England-Jamaica. But this is only the hors d'oeuvre, isn't it, before the main course, because June hosts Royal Ascot, World Cup, Wimbledon tennis, another test match. And it is just a crazy month of sport, which punters want to get involved in.
And by the end of the month, the figure will be how much?
Well, we reckon around about £1 billion mark. I mean, today, you know, £140-150 million would be fairly accurate. Royal Ascot alone will generate £300-400 million of turnover. A World Cup, you know, that's going to be extreme this year. You know, it is not beyond the realms of possibility. We have £1 billion month gambling.
How do you actually work out the odds? For example, an hour ago we spoke to the trainer of Noddy's Way. A great story, the horse 2,000-1. But why is that horse 2,000-1? Why not 3,000-1? Or why do the bookies not save themselves some monies and say 1,000-1?
Well, you have to put the price up that people, you can tempt people to back a horse out, and 1,000-1, somebody might not be interested. At 2,000-1, they may well be. How you make the odds? It's a combination of study, form, guesswork, and then ultimately market forces, Gary, to be honest with you. And as I said, that's why he's a 2,000-1 shot.
Cornelius, who are actually the star names here today to look out for?
Talking of guesswork, Vizendar is a warm favourite, unbeaten, trying to become the first French winner for 30 years. Horatio Nelson, Kieran Fallon, he's the king of Epsom in terms of jockeys. He's on Horatio Nelson. Sir Percy, the horse had a bit of a fitness setback. He's okay. The jockeys had one as well. He must be past fit by the doctor this morning after a fall last night. You mentioned Papal Bull, a late entry to the race, 75,000 trained by Sir Michael Stout. Septimus from Ireland. Hallebeck has been well fancied. Linda's Lad, another to mention, with Frankie Dettori, and Championship Point trained by Mick Shannon. They're just some of them.
And here we are with the horse boxes. They're just sort of putting the backs down. The horses are coming by us, and looking at Papal Bull and Sir Percy literally a second ago, the horses all look so relaxed, don't they, without a care in the world.
And the whole place is cool and calm. We're bathed in early morning sunshine. The going is good. It's good to firm in places. It is the lull before the storm. Between now and 4:20 this afternoon, the whole place will be cranked up hour by hour until we get to the big race, live on BBC Radio and Television at 4:20.
David Hood, as a bookmaker, do you actually bet yourself?
Yes, I do.
And do you win?
On balance, yes. I like every punch, I'll go through good spells and bad spells. I've had a tremendous start to the year. I'm well in front for 2006. Recently,
which means how much? Were you prepared to say?
I would be a few £1,000s in front, yeah. And generally over the period of a year, I'd end up that way. That's why Hills employ me. It's for the opinion.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, so it's literally you are an expert, because when people say, well, it's a mug's game, you would possibly agree that generally it is a mug's game, is it?
You can only be a mug to yourself. It depends on how you want to bet. I'd be a very selective gambler. You know, if you're trying to have a bet in every race every day, you're going to make it very difficult to pay. But if you are selective, and for instance, I've got two horses running for me in the Derby that I've backed at long odds ante post. The favourite, Vizendar, I'm on at 20-1, and Sir Percy, I backed him last year at 20-1, so I'm already on the right side of the book.
What's been interesting as well for me, Cornelius, down here by the sort of the stables, the horses have been coming off of the gallops, and then they've been showering them as well, and literally hosing them down.
Well, they have to get all the sweat and the various characteristics associated with a bit of exercise just off them, so they can be cool and calm. And it's already quite warm here, isn't it? And as the afternoon goes on, it will get warmer and warmer, and the horses just have to be kept cool and calm so they can run their absolute best over that mile and a half where it really matters this afternoon.
Okay, let's just have a final then prediction from you. Frankie Dettori never seems to win this race. I think he's rode in it, what, 13 times and hasn't won any chance at all today?
We've certainly got a chance. Linda's Lad's about a 14-1 chance, but I think this is a Frankie winner that bookmakers would actually be cheering. A tremendous result it would be for us. I don't necessarily think it's going to happen again this year. I think the French, though, Vizendar is the